And I got on TV.
Okay, great. All right. This is the July 19th, 2006.
And Mr. Hill is not here yet. We have a quorum, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, great. Thank you. And let me introduce Karen Bright. Stick your hand in the air, Ms. Bright. Recently appointed council member, City of Grover Beach, and she is the City Council's proposed delegate from the City of Grover Beach. And the procedure, Mr. Benedix, maybe you could just briefly explain the procedure for appointment.
Yes, when we have an opening to be appointed, the procedure is that the advisory committee will endorse the nominated member, and then I will take that endorsement to the Board of Supervisors, which is actually scheduled for approval next Tuesday. So I would need a motion and a vote to endorse Ms. Bright as the Grover Beach's
So moved.
Second.
Member.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is this a voice vote?
Yes.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? There we go. That's the sound of a railroad train screaming by. All right. Public comment. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak on anything that is not on the agenda tonight? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment. Oh, we do have someone. Great. Please step up there and tell us your name and what you're about.
Good evening. I'm Marilee Hyman. I have been appointed by Supervisor Lenthal as being District 3 representative at the Water Resources Advisory Committee. It's a rather large group. It has every one of the districts, every one of the cities, every one of the service districts. Anybody who has anything to do with water is present at that meeting in some form. And they advise the supervisors for our county on water issues. And they have some rather weighty ones that they are working on now. One of the most interesting is how to collect water and store it underground for those drought times. And so I'm very new at this. I know a little bit about water, but I feel like I've just gone back to college and taken a class, and I have a long way to go. But just to let you know that I will be there. If you need to contact me about anything we're doing, please do so. I live in Pismo Beach, and just wanted to introduce myself. I'm sorry I have to leave early because I have long-term tickets, or a citizen, whatever they call it. Give you a little pat on the head. My phone number is 773-6777, a very nice, memorable number because we operated a business that had to do with television and radio ads, and so you had to give a number that people would remember very easily.
Okay, thank you. Anybody have anything for Marilyn before she scoots off to her...
Are you enjoying that committee?
I feel quite honored to be on that committee. It's a large one, but it's very well run by Mike Wynn, who is the head of the group in Nipomo, and is also a professor at Cuesta. And I feel very honored to be there. It is a really good group. I've been to three of their meetings and several of their special ones. And they're right now working on the updating the master plan for integrating all of the water agencies so that we can cooperatively work not just within our own little domain but together, because watersheds don't respect political divisions. And water is precious to all of us. So, yes, I enjoy it very much, and I feel privileged to be a member.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Anything? No. All right. Anybody else from the public? Seeing none, we'll close that public comment period. Now, the meeting minutes... from March 15, 2007, since we weren't able to have a quorum on the May 17th meeting, we'd like to have those addressed by the committee tonight. So if you've had a chance to read them and have any comments.
I looked through them, Mr. Chairman, and I have no problem with any of them. If there's no other comments, I'll move they stand approved as mailed out.
I'll second that.
All right, we've got a motion and second. Anybody have any comments on that?
These are the minutes for
15th of March. March.
Yeah, Mr. Wallace is going to abstain.
And I will abstain, obviously. We're not Republicans
right
here.
Right. All right, and that's a voice vote, Mr. Benedix?
Yes, it is.
Yes, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Passed.
Just at the last meeting, basically, the summary of reports as a staff report. So this is for your information. There's no action required on this.
All right, well, you have those notes in the form of a staff report. So if that generates any questions, we'll entertain those two of us that were here that night. We'll happily entertain any questions.
Man, you guys did a lot of work for just being two of you.
Yeah, and we got done quite rapidly.
Yeah, we were done in about half hour, I think.
Right. The only time we've been done any sooner than that, or any more rapidly than that, was the time we couldn't get in the door here at Oceano. We were done in 20 minutes that night. So any questions or comments on that meeting staff report notes?
I have none.
And I guess we'll receive and file them in their present state.
Okay.
And I don't see Don Mellon in attendance, so Dean, will you be giving the rec report?
Yes, I will. The recreation report for June and July is in your agenda packet as item 3-1. I can just summarize that if you'd like, Mr. Gehring.
Yes, please do.
Okay. As is listed on there, the weekends have been sold out through the summer at the Lopez Recreation Area. I guess for probably Ms. Bright's information, the Zone 3 is responsible for the operation of the recreation area, which includes the campgrounds. We have a water system there that's a separate water system and a wastewater system also that the county staff operates as part of the Zone 3 operations along with the Lopez Water Treatment Plant. And as part of the construction of the dam, the Zone 3 has took responsibility for maintaining that recreation area for about 40 years, I believe, which is up in 2 years from now. So that's why it's connected to Zone 3.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's going on right now at the recreation area is Fluid Resource Management, which is a consulting firm, is temporarily performing operational duties at the wastewater treatment plant and operating our water system. They're doing that because we have just started up the new membrane treatment plant the end of May. And our operators, we have six operators that operate the water treatment plant. And right now, those six operators are working 24 hours a day. There is always someone there. We have a chief plant operator, which is our seventh person. He works a day shift, but because of the start and Department of Fish and Game trout planting has been discontinued now until the fall. There are interpretive events going throughout the summer. Note that the infrastructure projects, minor projects, continue. And there is a project involving converting a day use area from group day use to group camping use to better facilitate the facilities. The California Department of Boating and Waterways has approved plans for marina parking lot improvements and a new launch and courtesy docks, and that will likely be starting this fall. I'll mention the lake levels a little bit later. It appears that revenue and the attendance is off a little bit. That kind of surprises me. I wouldn't know why that's like that. I think I know there, again, for new members, there was a fee increase fairly substantial last year. And until this report, they've been running quite a bit higher than last year. This report, the revenue is lower, and also is the attendance. So I'm not sure whether it's the June period. I'm not sure. I don't have an answer to that question. But it is a little bit lower, and it's been higher for, I think, virtually every meeting since last June or July when we had somebody complain about the increase in fees. It's been higher, so this is kind of stabilized here. And that's the end of that report, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Benedix. We'll start with Mr. Earing, see if he has any questions and work our way around.
I don't have any questions on that.
Joe, thank you.
Joe?
No, I've got no questions. Thank you.
Just one, Mr. Chairman. Dean, has there been any more talk about general services turning over the rec area to somebody else?
There has been no action on that at this point. We haven't heard anything, and we have been so busy with the new plant, we haven't been discussing it.
Thank you.
Ms. Bright, anything?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything else from anybody on that item? Okay, thank you, Dean. I guess you're on to the operations report.
Yes, I will try to be happy tonight. I'm the only person that's giving reports. We have one person got hurt, somebody else is on vacation, and the other person is buried. So John Beaton is, if I pass out in my chair, John's up. So I appreciate John being here to support me, and I will try to not be boring when I speak, but I'm what you have tonight, so I'll do my best here. The Lopez operations report, the current conditions up at the Lopez facility.
Pardon me, Dean. Get some paperwork on that that might help Mrs. Bright?
We have more data than you could ever imagine about how much water we use, we process, the chemicals we use, the costs, et cetera, for all the activities that go on up there. I usually give an operations report of the status of the plant and the system. The lake is currently just under 77% full at 37,000 acre feet. We are currently making 4.5 to 5 million gallons per day with the new membrane system. And I guess I should say that I don't think we've had a quorum or met since the membrane system has gone online. It went online on May 26th. We went right from testing. We shut the old plant down, turned the new plant on, and we went right into testing because our water quality parameters were meeting the Department of Health Services permit requirements. We are, as I said, making 4.5 to 5 million gallons per day. We're using about 1.4 million gallons per day of state water. The water is blended into our clear water reservoir up at the plant. The amount of water we are getting from the state is a little bit less than we normally get because the first part of this year, as you may recall, we used more state water because we were running low on the plant because the plant was down because we were doing the retrofit. So we're making that up now. We are still releasing 4 million gallons per day for environmental releases. We have been having some problems with the new chlorine dioxide generator. We have two units up there that make chlorine dioxide to provide disinfectant for the system. So we are putting free chlorine into the system right now and anticipate we'll be kind of bouncing back and forth as we get the bugs out of some of our systems. And I mentioned that the operators are working 24 hours a day. That's on a sort of a month-by-month basis. We want to get them off of that as soon as we can, but we have a lot of alarms still going off. We have a lot of software problems mostly, and we have our staff, our consultants, working on that to fix that. And I'll get into that in just a minute. Again, the operations report that I handed out has a lot of details on it. That's been compiled over quite a few years to establish that information and provide that to you. I do try to have that ready, but as I said, it's generated by my staff, and we don't always get it out, so I do apologize for that. That's the end of that report, Mr. Gehring. I'll take questions if you wish.
Well, I'll start with Mr. Earing, see if he has anything to start with.
Okay. But we're doing extra work that is pushing that date beyond that time frame. We had a substantial completion date, which is basically the system was operating and providing water. That was called substantial completion. That was to be done by the end of May. The end of June was the final completion date. However, we've added work, and the contractor is still working up there. So I'll address that a little bit more in the next item, if you wish.
Okay, I hope you'll address the added money for changes or whatever.
I will do that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Walls, do you have anything at this time?
Dean, I have just a picky question on the line 12, the unaccounted for water. And in 1 month, we're showing a positive unaccounted for water. And the next month for May, we're showing a negative unaccounted for water. And can you help me make sense of what's going on there and the figures?
What I will say, John, is we have one of the things that we have done is we had at least one leaky valve from the plant that went out to the wastewater, to our wastewater sludge basins, and that valve was leaking, and we fixed that valve. So it's not leaking anymore. It wasn't leaking a lot. I'm sure during this transition where we are measuring at different points of our system, we're going to have some numbers that we will have to rectify because they're not going to be comparable to our previous system where we tightened everything up. Things are going into the Clearwater Reservoir at different points than they were operationing before. So what I can do, John, is I can check that number and get back to you and advise you why we're having a difference there, a minus, for example.
Yeah, the only thing that didn't make sense was, a couple things there, but the year-to-date showed a negative unaccounted-for water, which would seem to say that we have gained that amount of water. And maybe we're making good water out there out of the atmosphere or something, but I'm not sure what's going on there.
That would be wonderful. We did process it. As part of the upgrade, we did process water, and this may be where this came from, through the plant, but we didn't put it in the distribution system. We had about 2 full weeks where we processed water and we put it back into the terminal reservoir, which is where we draw the water from. Okay. That may be why this is like this, and as you probably know, during that 2-week period, we were not providing any water from the plant to the agencies. We were just providing state water. So I'm sure there's some glitches in here that we're going to have to rectify.
No problem. Thanks.
Okay.
Mr. Costello.
Well, John stole my thunder. That was the question I had, so I'm just trying to figure out how we manufacture water out of nowhere. Other than that, I've got no questions.
Mr. Reynolds.
No, thank you.
No. Ms. Bright, anything?
Well, I do just to kind of follow up on that, because I'm very interested in this. So can you just briefly tell me where would the unaccounted water come from generally?
And some of it we would utilize through our tank. To complicate this issue further, now we basically take the treated water and the water that goes through the system, which is clarified or filtered, we take that water and we recirculate that back into the beginning or the head of the plant, so the contaminants are continually recirculated, if you will, so we get higher and higher contaminations and we get less and less wastewater through the process of this system. And I'm sure at this point that we don't have all the loops all tabulated correctly, and so I'm not surprised that we're providing more water than our meters are actually reading, because it's a little bit different process. We're wasting a lot or losing a lot less water than we had in the past, and we won't be utilizing as much because we don't have the large usage of water to clean things as we did before. Everything is basically chemically cleaned. That may be difficult because we have to pay more money for the chemicals and recycle or waste the water. But I'm sure you're going to see a lot less unaccounted for water or lost water in the system because we're virtually not wasting any water at this point or using any for the process system itself.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Dean, I had a question regarding the chlorine dioxide. Apparently, we're on free chlorine at this point.
That's correct.
Now, I'm just wondering, did that come up at the last technical advisory committee? Are all the operators aware that we're free chlorine and so that perhaps they can time their THM sampling appropriately?
I remember this came up before, and at the TAC, we've been discussing that. I can't tell you this week if the operators were advised because my superintendent, Ron Coleman, was out on vacation this week, and the assistant superintendent was taking care of that. Do you know, John?
I just wanted to make one comment. When he mentioned free chlorine, that's just one part of the treatment process. What's being delivered down the distribution system is still chloramines, so the THMs will be substantially lower than if the entire plant was on free chlorine. That's just the chlorine dioxide contact basin right now that's being treated with free chlorine. So we did do some testing when we first switched to free chlorine in the basin and looking at THMs. And with the new plant, the THMs that were formed at that portion were substantially less than what we saw in the old plant as well. So even with the free chlorine in the contact basin, our THMs were still down about 50-60 parts per billion.
So you're not expecting anything clear out at Port San Luis or Abel? If there was any thought or any hazard, you'd be notifying operators about that ahead of time.
Absolutely. I know Ron Coleman, as Dean mentioned, is very much aware, and if there's any chance or possibility that we would be delivering water that was substantially higher in THMs, he makes a point of notifying each of the Zone 3 agencies.
Okay, thank you. Does that generate any questions from anybody else?
Sounds good.
Got this in? No? Okay, thank you, Mr. Benedict, but you're right back on, I think. Plant upgrade?
Yes, thank you. The plant upgrade, as I mentioned, we started making water in May. That was an 18-month project. The contractor is still on the site, as I mentioned, because we have added quite a few change work issues. The things that are not finished on the site are basically completion of the new ammonia building, which was one of the last items to be done because we converted an existing control room for the filter process of the old plant to a new ammonia system, and that couldn't be done until the new plant was put online and everything else was basically finished. We do have some demolition that he has just about finished also. That obviously couldn't be done until the new chemical systems were put online, because that was a demolition of our old chemical facilities. We have one potentially large change order approaching probably about $100,000, as I have seen it to this date, and that's to make some adjustments to our domestic water system on the site. As I mentioned just a little bit ago, we have a domestic water tank, which is 50,000 gallons on the top of the hill on the plant. That provides water, drinking water, to the site itself. We have another tank lower than that that I believe is about 200,000 gallons, and that's the wash water tank, which has been utilized to wash the facilities for the last 40-some years. That tank is not going to be needed anymore, and the connection of those tanks to the site facility and the hose bibs and the distribution system on the site itself needs to be changed, because if we continue to run it the way we have in the past, the water in the 200,000-gallon tank will basically go stale, and it's unusable, and it will contaminate the distribution system. So we have to make some piping changes that are in the basement of an existing area where all the pipes come through. So it's a very difficult kind of a facility to do. And actually, we've been working almost 2.5 years to get a design for this, and we finally have a design for it. The original construction contract, I believe, was $15,300,000, if I think that was correct. We, to date, have issued about $300,000 worth of change orders. That's everything that we have done and that we know about. This would be the last change order, which would bring our changes up to about $400,000 in that range. So the costs have been kept very low. We've done a lot of things under time and material. I think you recall one of the recommendations I had was to enclose one of the open patio or a canopy buildings, because we had a lot of problems anticipated from birds, and the engineer's estimate was about $150,000, and we had that done for about $80,000 complete, including electrical work and some site work and some heating and ventilation work that was done. So I think we did pretty well on that without making a big issue out of it, and it's improved the facility quite a bit. So that's just one example of one of the things we've been able to do. So I am trying to hold costs down. From a larger perspective, the total project that we got approved for SRF State Revolving Loan Fund was $26 million. That's for the entire cost of the project. And I'm projecting at this point, with the additional $100,000 that I think it's going to cost to do this domestic water work, we'll be in probably under about $500,000 from that $26 million. So we are doing well there. I did mention to the TAC that we have several issues that are somewhat troubling with the design that I am working on, and I would like to have accomplished things that are safety issues. And I'm not sure the magnitude of those issues, but we are doing some retrofit work, probably going to have to enclose a couple other areas so that they're safe, so they're accessible, so it doesn't blow powdered activated carbon, which is done in a canopy area. The rain and the wind is blowing the carbon out of the area where it's processed, and that causes us some safety issues. We also have a pretreatment basin, which is called a dissolved air flotation, which we call DAF. And that basin is about 3 feet high, and it's an enclosed aluminum cover. And it has cables inside that pull a screed across that pull the sludge, which floats to the surface and filters the water. In order to, it's pretty much unacceptable the way it is at this point. There may be a couple other minor things similar to that that we're going to be asking the designer to pay for. And I don't know the magnitude of the other issues of these things that we will have to do, but I will bring those to the TAC when we discuss it. I mentioned it to them, and they told me they'd like to have a list of what those items were and the cost of them, so I'll be bringing that back to the TAC and advising them the things and discussions regarding that in the near future. The plant is running very well. The dissolved air flotation pretreatment system runs very well at low flow levels and very well at high levels. The mid-range, it runs at real excellent. So we're getting good filtration through that. The membrane system is basically about a $2 million system that the county contracted with a membrane supplier. That system is running very well. The things that are basically driving us crazy are the things that really aren't complete. Department of Health Services has been very happy with what we've been doing. They've been very cooperative. We just have some final things that are extremely annoying, but we're trying to get through those without driving my operators crazy, because they want the thing, you know, they want the car that just runs. You get in and you run it, and the car's getting flat tires, and the blinkers are going on, and alarms are going off, and things aren't working right, but the car is running, and we're making good water, so that's a positive thing. I try to keep that in mind when I'm extremely frustrated with the design work that we've had done, some of it. So that's, I'll stop there, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Mr. Benedict? Joe.
Dean, real quick question. In terms of the 200,000-gallon wash water tank, if we no longer perform that function, what are we using that tank for? What do we need that tank for?
We don't have adequate fire capacity for that facility. We have, as I said, a 50,000-gallon domestic tank. If we were to have a fire in our chemical area, we do have fire sprinklers, but 50,000 gallons, as you probably know, a fire truck can pump 4,000 gallons a minute. That sucks that down pretty fast. So our plan is that we're going to convert that 200,000-gallon tank to a fire water tank, and we're going to slowly circulate that through the system so we have good water that is usable, that we don't lose the use of the tank or the availability. Otherwise, we would effectively have to build another tank for fire storage. And that's our plan.
So that's the cheapest way to do that anyway?
That's fixed some of these. I think I mentioned to the TAC that when I was out there last Tuesday or Tuesday before, I was out there an hour and a half, and there was an alarm that went off every 5 minutes. So, and the operators have to respond to every one of those alarms every time it goes off. I am, to answer your question, I'm not sure I can tell you. It's sort of an order of degree. We have two chlorine dioxide generators. Neither of them seem to be today very responsive. The staff people are out fixing those. They worked really good for 2 weeks, and now neither one of them works very well. These are newly retrofitted systems, but they're being operated, they're being attended to now while they're down by the technicians who, you know, make and operate those things. So I guess I'd have to say our process is very stable, but it's going to probably take us, I would say, probably 3 months to have this thing pretty stable. If I were to relate it to when I think our operators can work 10 or 12 hours a day instead of 24, I'd have to say probably 3 months from now.
Thank you.
I hope not.
That's all my questions.
Okay. Thank you. Ted, you look like you have.
Yeah, I've got a question. Are all these electronic automatic valves that you put in this whole thing, or are these?
Most of them are. Yes.
It's going to take a while for the software to begin working.
Well, that was theoretically all pre-programmed while we were constructing it.
Oh, okay.
All of the boards and the controls were all set up. We knew how they were supposed to work. The problem is there's thousands and thousands of them, and they go from one system. They feed a main system, so they all come to the brain of the facility, and so you don't only have the system talking to its what's the word I'm looking for? Its computer, I guess, if you would, but that computer talks to a main computer that takes all the data from all of the systems, mm-hmm. and until each of those is every item is set up right, plus the programming is responds correctly, because the operators also adjust the system by sending data back and setting data points back. So until that's fine-tuned to 99%, we're still going to have some of these problems. We did, Black and Veatch attempted to get there, get it
even down to the point where you want any people poking around.
I could have you up there any time, but I think
I
really don't want you up there, if I was to be honest, because we have a couple of things that are just embarrassing at this point.
I know about that.
And I wouldn't want to tell you about them even.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's the only questions mm-hmm. I have.
Thanks. Joe?
Thanks.
Joe, you again?
Tom? I'm good.
Ms. Bright, anything?
Oh, millions, but we'll leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Dean, I was wondering about the Black and Veatch software technician. Apparently the software is written by Black and Veatch.
The software is an industry program called Wonderware that's made for this type of facility, and Black and Veatch customizes it to our particular application.
All right.
Quick question on that. Dean, is that open logic software so that when Black and Veatch goes away, the county programmers could modify it if they needed to?
I understand the middle part of what you said, John.
Is it open software? I mean, the logic can be accessed by the county's programmers later on?
It could be, except I don't think our staff has the capability to do that. We did and are considering having an instrumentation technician, as I think we discussed that sometime in the past, on our staff. It's one of our open positions that we have.
Yeah.
But that's a very, very focused expertise, and I'm not sure we'll ever hire somebody like that. But it is available and accessible. I think in the interim, we're going to have Black and Veatch helping us things. They can remotely access our plant. Yes.
I know that in some of the other plants that we're familiar with, there's some proprietary software on the control systems, and it's very costly to try to modify that. In some cases, over many years, when the company goes out of business, it's impossible to modify it. So I think Wonderware is one of those that can be accessed with
Yes, I don't know. Yes.
Good.
Mm-hmm. On the DAF, Dean, is part of what is being sought to change it from a confined space to not a confined space?
I'm not sure we can make it. I'm not sure we can change that. But at this point, it's an inaccessible confined space. I mean, I just made up that terminology, but that's really what best describes it. On a handout I mentioned to you, 5-1, it's the quarterly report from the last quarter. And this is the same report that Jennifer discussed at the last meeting, Mr. Gehring, but I wanted to bring it back and just briefly summarize it so that the other members would have the benefit of that if you want me to do that. If you don't, I'm fine, but it's up to you.
Probably be a good idea to
summarize. Just to get kind of a brief update, if you look on item 5-2 of the handout I gave you, there's three graphs on that page, and those graphs, our accounting division maintains the status of capital outlay, routine operation, and non-routine operation maintenance for the plant every quarter. So this is the third quarter, which would be January, February, March. And the first graph on the top, which is capital outlay, compares the capital outlay to the reserves and the actual results. The expenditures are currently under budget by about $375,000, primarily due to a perimeter fencing project, which we have applied for $500,000 grant for. We will not implement that project unless we get that grant, so at this point there's some supplemental money in there that's covering that. The routine operation and maintenance report is the second one, and there's a savings at this point of approximately $600,000. The unspent amount encompasses several categories, but primarily it's in water treatment. Any savings that we see here will be used by the district to absorb unanticipated costs related to startup of the new plant, and we will have some significant overtime because our staff is working, our six people are working four 12-hour days a week in order to balance out the plant. So we're going to have some overtime here that we're going to be paying for. And by the way, as I discussed that, we have a recruitment out for three water systems workers. Two of those workers will be utilized at the waste. At the Lopez water treatment plant. This was part of our project plan. As we had, we've been trying to get two workers for the last 2 years. Been very, very difficult to try to find water worker staff that has certifications. We actually hired one in January, and he didn't work out, so we let him go in May. So we're looking for two more people at this plant. That's a grade three water pigging projects for portions of the Lopez distribution system in the last 5 or 6 years. The project we have anticipating is for pigging the about 2 miles of the main 18-inch distribution line. We'll probably be doing that later the end of this year, depending on how the startup of the new plant. We have some testing parameters and periods that we have to do with it, and we don't want to encumber the plant startup and the plant testing in our contracts with the maintenance work we have to do here. So that's the extra overage that you see on this one. So that's the end of my report for last quarter.
John?
Just a quick question, Dean. We're through the end of your fiscal year. This was the third quarter ending with March. Do you suspect that the expenses through the end of the fiscal year have not eroded the savings that much, or is it?
Yes, we didn't start up with the extra operations until May, so we have probably 1 year, 1 month, June, we had the overtime, and I'm sure it will be have probably a little bit of an impact on the routine operations, but the other categories are virtually the same, I anticipate. What I guess I was going to say is that I'm trying to make sure that the charges that we are accruing by our staff are appropriately charged either to the Lopez upgrade project, which you'd be charging time to, or to routine maintenance operations. And at some point in time, it had to change from the project to routine operations. And I think we pretty much made that change around the 1st of June. So we are trying to keep track of that so that it's fairly assessed, because we don't want to tell you we spent an extra $100,000 on the capital project if it was really operation and maintenance.
Tom? Karen, anything on that?
My big question was the pigging, and thank you for explaining that.
Okay.
And I guess, Dean, you're sitting in for Doug Bird also.
Yes.
You got a worried voice out there.
Yeah, right.
Doug missed a step in our hallway a couple days ago and hurt his foot, so he's been kind of laid up for a little bit. But he was going to be here, and he told me this morning he was really sorry that he couldn't. So, as I was, in your package, you will see a brief update. Sources apparently in interest. The National Marine Fisheries Service, who is the initial agency that we have to get the HCP approved by, we got their interest and their attention, and we have been meeting every month with them, with Anthony Spina, who is the contact person to do his part of the HCP processing and review. And we met in June, and you see there that we had some discussions regarding the specifics of the models that we were using. We believe that we're coming very close together on model A, B, C, D. We've been picking different type of scenarios, and we're very close together on why we used what we used and what the impacts are, and not overly conservative or liberal in, for the perspective of how much water we're leasing for environmental purposes. So I've been accumulating this for you, and I will continue to do that unless you don't want me to. We did not meet in July. We had a meeting planned, actually, for Tuesday. The state, the problem with the state water system and the fish, and I can't remember the name of them right now, but the fish that the state water system is being detrimental to.
Smelt?
Yes, the smelt, the Delta smelt. Thank you. Anthony Spina is apparently involved with them, and he couldn't make this meeting, as well as our consultants, who also had to deal with the state issue. So we didn't meet this month. We will be meeting again next month to move this along. So we are attending to it, and it is on the front burner of Anthony Spina and National Marine Fisheries Service, which is very good news. So we will continue to pursue that and bring your reports on it. It's just right now we're in the technical process of going through the model. When we get the model done, I think Anthony will be able to look at the rest of the report, and we'll come to an agreement on what we're going to include in that report.
You know, Mr. Chairman, what's it going to be, another 3 years or 4 years?
Well, maybe we ought to take a swipe at trying to explain to Ms. Bright just what this thing is.
How many hours do we have?
Well, I tell you what, why don't I take an initial swing at it, and then please correct me and straighten me out at any point in this discussion. Years ago, the district, Zone 3, made certain filings with the state in order to build Lopez Dam. And those filings included the way the dam was to store water and the volume of the reservoir that would result. As it turns out, 25, because they believe we're not operating the reservoir in accordance with our permit or in accordance with CEQA. So there's that issue, which is in the background. So we're in the process of trying to get a new permit for the reservoir, which would account for the way it stores water and would account for the current volume and would alleviate the issues raised by the environmental groups who are allegedly suing the zone. I've not seen that lawsuit, so I believe it's only a potential lawsuit at this point.
I think it's been a threat more than anything else, haven't you?
A threat, right. To complicate things further, some years ago we were faced with the fact that the dam itself was found to be weak and subject to failure in an earthquake, and we had to rebuild the dam to make it strong enough to withstand a certain size earthquake. As part of all that, the dam storage level had to be reduced and kept down to a certain level because they were afraid it would fail in an earthquake until they got it strengthened. So we began to release quite a lot of water in order to keep the storage down. In addition, some of the activities that were involved to repair the dam involved changing the point of release of downstream water. And that got the environmental agencies, the resource agencies involved, and they became concerned that the way the release was being handled could harm recently named species, which were recently named to the list, which said that they were endangered. Steelhead, red-legged frog. We also have the tidewater goby down at the mouth of the creek, which is of some concern now, but wasn't a concern then. All of this has led us to the conclusion that we needed to complete what's known as a habitat conservation plan to preserve the environment of those species in the creek and to preserve the water supply for the agencies that operate the system insofar as reasonably possible. Now, this GD habitat conservation plan has been ongoing now for about, give or take, 9 years. Dean, are we at 9 years now? We're 9 years into
at
this.
Least.
We're 9 years
into it. Finalized?
No. We haven't gotten, well, we've got a very solid draft plan for inadvertently doing so, and even larger criminal activity actions, including fines, for purposely damaging an endangered species.
Now, when you say the way we do business, the way
we release water,
uh-huh.
For instance, up until the time that we about the time that we began repair of the dam, we almost never allowed any flow, downstream release flow, to go past the 22nd Street Bridge. So that portion of the creek from the 22nd Street Bridge in Oceano here to the sea was always dry. And not only that, we believed that it was wasting water to let that become a wet stretch. Mm-hmm. Well, as soon as the steelhead became listed as an endangered species, then the resource agencies think that that stretch needs to be kept wet. So the amount of water we release has a great impact, or potentially a great impact, on endangered species. Not only that, all of these guys want to routinely stick their pumps in the damn creek and pump it. So for those reasons, we've been involved in this habitat conservation plan for 9 years, $1 million. We still don't have an approved plan, but we are now getting closer, it sounds, because this guy, Anthony Spina, who is with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife?
No, he's with the National Marine Fisheries Service. It's the federal fish agency.
Has the same difference.
As Mike Ford said, I don't remember who went to that meeting down south. As Mike Ford said, in their initial meeting, Anthony Spina said, "We are all going to come together." Now, he didn't bring both hands together. He brought our hand over to his hand. And so that started the tone. And I think he's come around some since. And that, I'll leave it at that, and anybody can correct me where I screwed that up.
No, one point. We use, 4.5 million gallons of water a day for drinking water to our client agencies. And we put about the same amount into the creek right now just to maintain the environment.
For everybody to use.
Yeah.
Do we actually have a figure of the amount of water that's going into the ocean during that?
We probably can measure that now, can we not? Or we don't have a gauge.
22nd Street?
I don't know if the gauge in there would...
We don't have a measuring gauge at 22nd Street at this point. We want to do that this year.
It's being used by everybody.
And now for drinking water.
It has been used for everybody.
Oh, okay.
For drinking water.
Pretty heavy.
Part of that recharge helps our well system.
And I just wondered if we had figure on how much is really being wasted and going into the ocean.
I don't believe we know that.
It's not being wasted. You know,
it's for the steelhead trout.
That's right. That's being used for environmental purposes, according to
that. Jim, one little sidebar for that may help.
Please keep it on the straight and narrow.
In the long run, is that before the dam was put in, probably 8 or 9 years out of 10, the Rio Grande Creek would be dry from Highway 1 bridge on down and sometimes up that way farther. So there's been more water, there's been a live stream in the creek basically ever since 1970 when they started releasing water down things. But until we started this rehab business, we never let it go all the way to the ocean. So. And you try to explain that to these regulatory people, and you guys don't know anything. You've only been around here for 100 years, you know. What do you know? So, like talking to that clock boy.
Well, and we still discharge that amount of water even when it's raining.
Yes. Now, just to thank you, Ted, that brings me to, I hope this is the last part of my dissertation here, and that is that in great and continuing frustration, this committee and the technical committee finally decided to try to figure out some way to recapture some of this water we've been releasing downstream. And Mark Hutchinson, who is the environmental, what's his title?
Environmental Division Manager.
Environmental Division Manager for the Public Works Department of the county, came up with, nope, I didn't do it, they keep trying to assign this thing to me, but Hutchinson came up with this proposed interim downstream release plan, which will, when finally fully implemented, will save some of the water that we're losing downstream by the way that we operate. But that's kind of another story. But
I was going to say that probably leads right into the next topic on the agenda.
Yeah, you got right there. You're down to D right now.
Okay. I've talked enough. Who's next?
Probably Dean.
Oh, yes. Are we done with HCP, Dean?
We are done.
You did good with your explanation, Jim.
Thank you. Anybody else have anything to add?
No, very good, Jim.
All right. And it looks like Dean is filling in for Mark Hutchinson.
There is excess water or significant increased water in the creek from rainfall events. That plan, after quite a bit of discussion and review, et cetera, was approved by the Board of Supervisors as a consent item in May. So that plan has been approved by the county, actually by the Flood Control District Board acting as that advisory agency. And what that plan includes is it sets up a scenario whereby when we get saturated groundwater conditions such that rain that falls down, that falls, goes to the creek and doesn't absorb by the groundwater, gets to a certain point, we will start ratcheting back this 4 million gallon per day release that we're doing from the dam into the creek. And there's a schedule set up about how we do that. We reduce our outflow by about half a cubic feet per second. We're releasing about 6 cubic feet per second if you translate that into cubic feet per second versus million gallons per day. So our adjustment will go from 6 cubic feet per second down to 5.5 cubic feet per second for about 24 hours. We'll kind of see what the rainfall looks like, the runoff looks like, measure the, we'll be watching the level of the streams. And if it continues to stay stable, we might reduce it the next day down another half a cubic feet per second. And I think our maximum reduction totals about half. Instead of 6, we'd go down to 3 cubic feet per second. And likewise, if we see that we have significant drops in the stream, we might go back a half a cubic feet per second. And the intention of this plan, I think initially, was we anticipated at worst conditions we'd be saving about 200 to 300 acre feet per year of water. And if you remember that, because that'll come up in one of my following discussions about increasing the dam height, but that's probably a minimum savings that we're looking at by operating this plan. It's kind of sensitive because you can imagine that, you know, our superintendent will be up there turning a valve to reduce it a little bit, and he'll have to be watching our real-time stream flows, and we can't predict the rainfall, so we don't know whether it's going to rain like crazy or it's going to stop and all of a sudden get sunny. I will say, as part of this effort, I'm the utilities division manager, and I have a staff that monitors and maintains the rain gauges and the stream gauges. And as part of this process of getting the IDRIS approved, we also installed a couple of rain gauges that we didn't have before, stream gauges we didn't have before, up at the just below the dam. And fish die, and somebody comes up and says something, then we change something, and we killed fish, and there were significant penalties for killing fish because you reduced your water flow. So that's the liability side that was a big issue as we went through this process. So, but it's a fairly conservative. It's meant to be an interim type of a operation, and hopefully it'll get us through until we get to the point where we have the HCP approved.
So that's just until the conservation plan is completely approved.
Yes, we anticipate. When the HCP is approved, it will take over, and there will be new measures that will tell us when and where we can reduce the flow, and it'll be more of a broad perspective of flows. The HCP really is going to attempt to mimic natural flows as if the dam wasn't there. Now, that's not possible, but as some of the members have indicated, that the resource agency, National Marine Fisheries, is very concerned that we're mimicking normal natural flows. And even as Tom mentioned, there wasn't any water sometimes, and that we're providing water now. So nobody knows what the fish do now. Nobody really knows, but that's what the resource agencies want us to mimic. So it's getting more to maybe during the summertime with this new HCP plan, we don't release any water at all. Because that's what nature would have it done, and that's what it's supposed to. That's what the model is trying to tell us, and that's why there's various perspectives on what is real and what's not.
Thank you.
That conclude your report.
That concludes my report, Mr. Gearing.
Any questions on that one from anybody? John, you look like you're.
What's the status of the MOU between the agencies, or the status of the board's consideration of that?
Did you want to explain to Ms. Bright what that is?
The Technical Advisory Committee urged that the Board of Supervisors and the County Public Works Department proceed with implementing a interim downstream release program ahead of the release of the HCP while we're going through the substantial work on that. And at that time, there was significant discussion about liability because if there was a fish kill amendment, which scared everybody to death because it brought up a lot of other issues too. And
let me answer your question because I thought you were talking about a different MOU. That's why I wanted to clarify.
Okay.
There was no MOU executed, John. There was a presentation made on the Idris to each of the five agencies that receive water. And the way that we proceeded sort of as a negotiated process was that we would present the Idris plan to each agency. If any of the agencies had issues with, you're changing things, I may be subject to more liability that cost us more money, then they were to advise the county after or during the presentation. And none of the agencies objected, I guess is the best way to say it. So our interpretation was that it was covered under the agreement to the extent that it covers general operations, although it's not covered specifically to do this specific plan because obviously it wasn't anticipated. But there was no MOU. It was done I'm trying to think of a word, but that's how it was done, John.
So at this point, is county staff preparing to go forward other than...
Yes. Yes. I will be telling Ron Coleman, based on our staff's observations and the rainfall events that we get, when to be turning that valve and when to be opening it or closing it based on the stream flow that we get. Now, one of the things I was going to mention, but it slipped my mind. This is the second time, so I'm sure I'll catch it again. But we are on board to do that. We'll be observing the rainfall saturation, well levels, stream levels, and rainfall events. So the thing I did want to tell you was one of the units in our division responsible for long-range planning did get one of the rainfall gauges that we have at Lopez, and I believe it's the one on the dam. We did get that included in a forecasting system that USGS has. They do forecasts for storms. We thought it was important to at least have a guess as to, besides Tony Coppola or Dave Hovde, what kind of rainfall events we were going to be getting. So we will be getting, during rainfall anticipated events, a prediction, a forecast, short and long range, about what will happen at the dam, which would impact, obviously, our anticipated flow, our ability to make adjustments.
And sense the soil or do some kind of thing that did this automatically?
I'm not aware of anything that we would trust to do that based on the level of rainfall and a resultant stream level.
It really depends, though. It really is going to depend upon what kind of water's within the soil, more than how much rainfall we get. How much is really absorbed, and what the
how much
has been withdrawn. You know, I mean, if you had a big hot spell, okay, let's say, and we're dumping water, and there's a lot of withdrawals. It could well be that, you know, your various different levels of your aquifers or whatever you're using here, that they're going to be down, okay? And mm-hmm. It's really dependent upon how much is leaving the creek down at the end rather than how much we're dumping out. I got this in my mind, but it looks to me like it's a automatic sensor type thing that might be better handled by, you know, software and eventually some sensory equipment and some software packages and do it automatically.
I'm sure that's possible. At this point, there's just a lot of things that we don't know. The response of the certain things are very basic, that we know that it takes about 6 to 8 inches of rainfall in the fall before the ground is saturated. But we just watch the well levels, and we know that water comes up to a certain point. After that, the majority of rainfall we get pretty much goes down the creek. It runs off, so the ground is saturated. And so we need to, that's kind of the first stage. I'm just hesitant because after knowing how all these automatic controls are supposed to work at the water treatment plant, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know,
they'll eventually work.
I'm sure they will. Everybody assures me they will. I would just hate to connect a float or a transmitter, whether it's radar, sonar, or whatever electronic, in a rain gauge to something that would change a valve of releases into the stream. I feel real comfortable about closing that valve when it's raining real hard, and that's the lowest flow that can get through the entire creek. Some of the creek has a lot higher capacity. We're talking about a release of 6 cubic feet per second, which is what we're doing now. So if you look at percentages of 6 to 6,500, the amount of adjustment that we would make is extremely minuscule. I'm not sure we could even measure it with minor flows. So to me, as an engineer, it seems very obvious that we could make some minor adjustments here, save a significant amount of water, and have no effect on the creek. Problem is, what doesn't rain for 4, 5, 6 months, that 6 CFS is a big part of the water that goes down that creek. I think most of the time it runs around 20 cubic feet per second. So the 6 that we put down there is fairly significant, almost a third. But we have a big rainfall event, it jumps up to 100 or 200 CFS or higher. You know, we could shut the thing off, in my opinion, but that's a little bit more liberal than we're going to approach. But we'll be sort of testing here and watching it for the first couple of years before we get real aggressive at it.
Dean, if I may, maybe to clarify a couple of things for Ted, too, is from the time that the creek leaves the freeway bridge in Rio Grande until it gets down to Highway 1 bridge down here by Oceano, there are probably 3 different reaches where that water goes in the ground and completely disappears, but then it'll resurface again. So that would be, I know where you're going with that monitoring, but that would be rather difficult to get engaged just right, I would think.
Another complicating factor is that the branch that goes south, and I believe that's Werowero, I'm not sure that's exactly the name, but that watershed can receive different rainfall than the Lopez watershed that doesn't include that arm of the creek. So you can get various storm rainfall events depending on which way the storms are going and what they hit and how they drop their water. So that complicates that issue, and that's one of the things we want to watch. We want to eventually get a rain gauge in both of the major watershed that's contributed to Rio Grande Creek in stream gauges, so we can kind of monitor that and get some kind of rough idea.
Okay.
Karen, anything?
I might talk to you about some of these things.
Okay, sure.
Rather than taking up time with everyone, if you wouldn't mind.
We scheduled one with you, and we weren't able to get together.
No.
Right. You know, there's a couple things I would want to mention, and that is held harmless. So there's a reason for continuing to pursue the habitat conservation plan over and above water for the municipalities. Mm-hmm. So, let's see, anybody else have anything on that? Mm-hmm. Dean, we're back to Dean. For the rec area temporary operations?
I did sort of summarize my point there as I was discussing, the recreation area report, and that was basically having fluid resources management operate the rec area. I just also probably should mention that one of the facilities, which is the country club area that we serve wastewater treatment plant, I have my North County staff who operates the North County facilities. They are coming down and operating that, so again, I can relieve my South County staff to work at the treatment plant these additional hours. So we're trying to take some measures to ease that. So I really covered that already, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on that item? And state water cease and desist, you kind of talked about that. Do you want to go into some more on that?
Just again, to summarize, I wanted to give you a little bit of an update. This goes back to March when the state Superior Court judge handed down a decree that the Department of Water Resources did not have the proper permits to be operating the state water system. Does that sound familiar to any of us? Because fish could be killed that are endangered species. As of May, there was supposed to be a certain start date where that was going to be implemented. That has been stayed at this point. The Department of Water Resources has filed an injunction to stop this from happening. That's being considered on one front. The humorous thing that I have found they've also done is they have said that they're going to file an HCP with the state for the state water system. I can't imagine how that's going to help anything, but they said that they're going to file an HCP. So maybe they were doing one, but anyway, that's another thing they're doing. There's really, at this point, you may have heard that they shut down a pumping station about a month ago for a couple of weeks because there was some environmental damage to these fish they thought they were going to try to take care of. That's been done, and that pumping station is back up again. There are some scenario plans that the state is running if in Zone 3 or really the county. The county has an allocation of 25,000 acre-feet of water. We only take about 4,400 acre-feet of that water every year. So the county effectively, if the state reduced their state water down to anything less than 17%, which is the amount of water, state water we take, it wouldn't affect the county at all. That really would make a lot of people upset that weren't in this county, but we're in that condition that we're fortunate in that case. But some of their scenarios are significantly less than 17%. And that would have impacts on us as well. So there's really nothing concrete. It is a big issue. It is serious. The governor is aware of it, and he's monitoring it. And I'm sure, I think he's even mentioned that he would have to take some measures to stop from reducing the state water project down to 10% of what it had been providing for these last 25 or 30 years. That's the end of my report on that, Mr. Gehring.
Questions? How about down at this end? Anybody?
I'm quiet.
My private, so I don't sound completely stupid. So I'll only be stupid in front of you.
There are no dumb questions on this board.
You know, Mr. Chairman, one thing I heard the governor say yesterday, I believe on the news, was that we need to explore the possibility of increasing our surface storage by building more dams. So that's something we haven't heard for a long time.
They might need an HCP for that. Who knows?
Might not happen, but at least somebody's talking about it.
Anybody else on that item? All right. Investigate increasing dam storage. What do you have to say, Mr. Beck?
I think there's some collusion going on this segues here because what Mr. Reynolds said just goes right into this.
Sorry about that.
No, that's wonderful. I did hand out a memorandum that I put together today that kind of summarizes what I wanted to tell you about increasing the Lopez Dam capacity. I will try to summarize it for you maybe as you glance through it. Probably the most important thing is the graph on the second page. But the Technical Advisory Committee has from time to time discussed raising the height of the dam in one fashion or another to gain additional storage. The staff has looked through our records, and we have found no investigation. But in any event, it was brought up by the TAC, and the TAC has recommended that it come to your board to make a recommendation as to whether you wanted us to do some preliminary investigations into raising the height of the dam to gain additional storage water. And so I put this memorandum together. There's a couple of issues that I think are important. Under the sedimentation section that I have provided to you here, I wanted to let you know that in 2002 there was a topographic and bathymetric study done which measured the watershed terrain and the amount of storage volume under the water to determine how much capacity the dam actually had, as best as we could determine. And I, from what I understand, these are pretty accurate. They must be, because they came in pretty close to what we see. But in the table on page 2 there, you'll see 1969 data, 2002 data, and the differences in the storage that was calculated. So the storage capacity in 1969, you will see, was 52,000 acre-feet. In 2002, it was 49,000 acre-feet. The next line shows dead storage, and that's shown as 4,000 in 1969, but higher, or excuse me, less of in 2002 of 1,750 acre-feet, which results in a usable storage of, when you do the math here, of only 350 acre-feet less. So we may have lost, because of sedimentation, approximately 2,200 acre-feet, but that's not usable water because it's below the intakes that take the water out of the dam. So according to this information, it's pretty accurate. It's the best that we have, latest that we have. We've effectively lost about 350 acre-feet of storage. So I provide that to you as background information. That's the information we have. And I believe that was done as part of the dam retrofit when they did some calculations. And it makes sense to us as engineers that somebody would have said, oh, maybe we ought to look at increasing the capacity, or is the capacity make sense when they were doing the retrofit, because for a little bit more maybe work or money, I believe the retrofit project was around $25 million also, wasn't it? Is that the approximate cost of that? Yeah.
27 is that
cost? Yeah, yeah. I think it was identical to the upgrade project. But I got periods that were used in the last about 60 years that this study did this evaluation, and those are the drought periods that were used to determine how much safe yield that was available from Lopez as it's currently constructed. And the interesting results here, and I don't know if this is a factor of just calculation or not, but interestingly enough, the safe yield calculations that were done indicated there's about 500 more acre-feet per year of safe yield than was anticipated in 1969. And as you might surmise, in 30 years, calculation methods are different, people are different, data is different, more accurate, et cetera. So order of magnitude is there, but we're not really exactly sure. And I just caution, as you read these numbers, some of these numbers, they don't include the environmental releases that we do, we are required to make, which is about 4,300 acre-feet a year. So I bring that to you as sort of background, really. What the TAC again recommended is that your committee consider and provide a recommendation on doing an initial feasibility analysis, I'll call it maybe even a fatal flaw analysis, of increasing the dam height, and the issues we would anticipate looking at would probably initially be, is it structurally capable of handling additional height in the water, the additional pressure? And when I say additional height, I think the TAC has discussed basically something in an order of magnitude of 2 feet. So we're not talking about raising it 15 or 20 feet. And so and that could potentially be done by making some adjustments in the way the spillway operates. But initially we would probably look at, is it feasibly technically to do something without rebuilding the whole dam, which obviously would be way too expensive, to get some additional capacity. And I think secondarily, we'd be looking at what are the environmental impacts to the surrounding area. We would obviously eat up, if we went 2 feet high, if your slope is 2%, we might be eating up 200 feet in all directions through the campground, all around where the flat terrain might be behind the dam in the reservoir area. So likely there would be significant environmental impacts that we would look at and what those might be. I've listed issues of consideration, impacts that would have to be done. What we would anticipate doing if you wanted us to embark on this is doing a preliminary study, probably with URS Corporation, since they did the dam retrofit design and they have all the data and information. Ask them to do.
Let me amplify your remarks just a little bit before we get into discussion. My recollection is, and this is sort of an institutional memory situation, is that perhaps 15 to 20 years ago, the firm of Lawrence Fisk and McFarland did a study on increasing the safety over the reservoir by utilizing a labyrinth-type spillway. And what I thought we would discuss, which is a little bit different than Mr. Benedict has brought forth, is the thought of raising the spillway in such a way that you do not raise the maximum depth of the lake under 100-year storm conditions. You simply raise the spillway and take certain actions so if you need the ultimate capacity of the spillway in a 100-year storm, you can get it by either lengthening the spillway with a labyrinth-type spillway, or perhaps you use an inflatable bladders to temporarily block the spillway, and if the storm becomes too big, you deflate the bladders and let the spill go over the spillway. But in either case, you do not raise the ultimate depth of water or the pool that can occur under 100-year storm conditions as of today. So I'm disappointed we weren't able to find that study, and I'm kind of wondering, John, have you looked for that?
It might have been more than 15 years ago, John.
Well, I'm getting
Dean, my memory's a little foggy, too, but just like Jim was saying, I think Chuck Lawrence and his firm did provide that analysis, and it might even have been a letter report, if you will, to the county engineering department at that time, investigating the labyrinth type of the spillway. Again, I don't know the particulars of it at this point in time, but it should be in the county's files, or suggest you might even try to call Clint Milne and see if Clint can give you more particulars as to where that might have been filed or the actual occurrence there. Is Chuck Lawrence still alive?
I don't know.
Who?
Chuck Lawrence. He lives in Santa Barbara. He did. His firm was there. And Chuck is a good friend of the county, and he did a lot of work up here. If he is still around, you might call him directly down there, and I might even have a phone number if he's still at his old residence.
But actually, I did try to call that number because I worked with Chuck a few years ago.
And into that 100-year spillway elevation, and I don't know where that takes it out over the rec area, whether that's below the recreational facilities. And again, it would be a temporary type of an event. Obviously, you would store the water there for a while, but it still would be temporary from the standpoint of not increasing the level of the lake very long. The other consideration that we talked about at TAC was a temporary type of installation instead of a labyrinth type of a spillway. And a labyrinth type of a spillway, you guys probably know, you increase the length of the weir that the water goes over, and you increase the capacity of that weir in the same total length, but because you zigzag it, it has more capacity, and so therefore has the same capacity as without it. It's an engineering trick.
But you're able to make the depth a little bit deeper.
Exactly. Jim, that's what we're talking about. The other option was an option that I had personal experience with down south many years ago at San Gabriel Dam, and it was a poor man's way of doing it, but San Gabriel Dam has a huge capacity, especially at the top couple of feet of that reservoir. And so after the storm events of that particular year, it was obvious that the water was going to crest and go over the spillway, and then under recession flows, as it was coming down, the flood control district sandbagged the spillway to about 2 feet of depth, and they saved, you know, probably 300,000 or 400,000 acre feet of water that way. That's an extreme example, and I don't know if they do it today, but it was done a long time ago, too many years ago. So that was another example that could be accomplished by an inflatable bladder on top of the spillway. So I think that the easy step, rather than committing to a URS study, is to look at what happens under a 2 feet increment within the 100-year flood level on top of the spillway, and what amount of water would we theoretically save at that point with a 2 foot incremental depth in the reservoir. I mean, with that information, we could kind of decide whether it's worth proceeding with another big study, meantime, I'd be happy to help out as much as I can about finding where that old study was.
Well, let me just mention in response to one item that you brought up that I neglected to put in the report, which I don't know why I didn't. So it would go 990, and probably 2 feet would be another 1,000 acre feet. So you're talking about 2,000 acre feet if you could increase the dam by 2 feet. Or I say the dam, the storage capacity. One of the things that was discussed also at the TAC for your other members is that I believe, I don't know for sure, but I believe we have about 3 feet of freeboard. And freeboard is contingency height. I believe that's what we have in different designs. Different agencies require different amounts of freeboard. And one of the discussion was we could encroach into that freeboard rather than have 3 feet and then the spillway is completely at full capacity. We could increase it beyond that and take some of that freeboard and make additional storage of that. That was one discussion that was made. So there's some other issues that go along with that. But that's the capacity that you're talking about is about 1,000 acre feet per foot.
Another thing to remember is this doesn't happen every year. Obviously, it only happens when you have close to spillway flow.
Correct.
Otherwise, you never actually can use that extra capacity there. So it only happened in really wet years. But 2,000 acre feet of extra storage in a wet year would go a long way.
My recollection is that Chuck took all that into account, and he utilized some long historical records of spills at the reservoir, and he concluded, this is the best of my recollection, that we would increase safe yield, or could increase safe yield about 900 acre feet. So, you know, you could increase the storage by a couple thousand, but the net increase in safe yield was quite a bit less than that. But still, in today's world, 900 acre feet is no small amount of water in terms of dollars.
Especially with the resource releases that we have to do.
So, should we give it another couple of months to see if we can find this?
Well, I think we should. Yeah. Might not be a bad idea.
Yeah, I'd be all over it. I think, I saw a report or letter report of that nature describing that when I was at the county many years ago, but I don't know if it's still around.
Okay, I have had my staff try to locate it, and I can't find it at this point.
Would it have been distributed to the various agencies?
It was.
It was?
Yeah, I had a copy one time.
You did?
Yeah. Well, I ought to ask Dennis. I don't know. He's been.
We had a record.
Could you go back a minute to this chart that we have here? Is what that's telling me is that that sedimentation inside this dam is small.
Yeah, I think that's. I was very surprised to see that minimal amount.
I'm very surprised to see just 350 acre feet of water could be gained by just by dredging, probably.
Yeah, that's what this is telling us, is that we have had a lot of sedimentation, but it's been in the dead storage area. But it's, you see the dead storage difference there, yes.
Okay, and so the other thing that you're telling me is that the lake is about 1,000 acres, and so if you raise it, you're going to get two feet, you're going to get 2,000 acre feet, plus or minus.
Yeah, I didn't look at the area, but that's...
But it probably is close to 1,000 acres.
Right.
Well, I don't know what we have at Pismo in that old, in the old City Hall building there, because that's where a lot of old stuff has been stored. But, we might... If this was given out to the various agencies, maybe we got that report laying around somewhere.
Right, they might have it too.
Yeah, they might. Yeah. I can see it. It's a dark blue binder.
if we can get somebody to go in there with the rats and stuff, right. I don't know.
Well, it was done. I can remember.
The ladies don't like to go in there. They won't go there. See if we get one of the maintenance guys to go in there.
That was done after 1980.
I think it was.
After 1980?
I got appointed to this board about 1980.
Okay.
I think it was 85, 87.
What's the heading of this thing?
I think it had the word labyrinth spillway in it. And I believe the authors would have been Lawrence Fisk and McFarland.
Was it the same report where they did a safe yield analysis?
Would it be safe yield?
They did a safe yield analysis as well, but I wonder if it was the same report.
I think it was a specific topic on that issue. That does bring me up to a question for Dean.
Could you just go a little bit further and explain this labyrinth thing? What is it? Is what you're talking about as a sinuous
it looks like a bunch of the blocks that used to cascade down, you know, you just push them together like.
What you do is you take this spillway and you do this with it. And all of a sudden you have a spillway that is much longer and has much more wear area to let water over it.
Okay.
And you therefore can raise it and increase the depth and have the same capacity we did before.
Okay.
You could zigzag it, but Jim's more correct. That's an easier thing to construct than a zigzag.
Okay.
Yeah, but the way the spillway is configured up there at Lopez, you could block off half of it with a foot or 2 feet and whatnot and leave the other alone, and you'll still be raising up that much.
Well, that's the idea of an inflatable bladder. You do that under recession flows when the storm is coming down, and you don't have a forecast for another big storm coming in behind it. At the end of the season is when we do that.
Can we make a concerted effort for Arroyo Grande, Pismo Beach, and Dalbuck and Gone?
I could call Flint or...
I don't have it.
Last year that we really had, I think in about 96 or something, 96, 97, I think was the last year we had big rainfall where the water was coming over the dam. Over the spillway?
I don't know the year, but...
Yeah, I think it's around there.
Yeah.
As I remember...
Well, let's see if we can find out.
As a point of reference, though, just as a meaningless fact, I suppose.
Joe,
in 1983, 76,000 acre feet went over the spillway.
Yeah, but it hasn't been that wet. In 96 or 97,
no.
I think it was. Was it last year?
Jim, they are searching the archives for something else.
Maybe we can look for that.
And I thought maybe I know that Martin was having staff search the archives for something back in the 60s.
Well, maybe we should see if we've got something in storage. Yeah.
This would probably be before 1984.
Okay,
maybe.
That era.
I left the county in 84, and I saw it when I was at the county. So it would be prior to 84, I believe.
I had a question for you, Dean. Looking at the topic of safe yield in your report, looking at the range of safe yield and taking the low number of 9220 and subtracting 4344 for downstream releases, I get 4876 acre feet available for municipalities, not 4530. That's a plus.
There's no adjustment to what the district's contract with the agency shows as the yield.
Would it be worthwhile to look into whether that's an appropriate action? 350 acre feet is no small amount of water.
The attachment that I put with the my memorandum to you on this subject, as you see, there's four paragraphs of different safe yields. I didn't read through these in details because when I saw four options, I thought, oh my gosh, we got two options with four each, and then we got other options in the report that you don't even have in front of you. So I think it's something that probably we should look at and decide, maybe give you a little bit more detailed information, or maybe talk with the TAC about where did this come from, and is it something that you would want to, because I think we'd have to make a contract revision for everybody with that.
Right.
And have to go through that process. So we can certainly do that if you want us to look at it and bring it to the TAC.
Well, there are a couple of agencies that could use the water if it's available.
It sounds to me like you guys have all your hands full for the next 3 to 6 months without trying to load something else on it.
Well, besides losing my senior engineer for 2 months who was helping me on Lopez due to an illness, and she's not back for another month, I'm just I'm just buried, but
what's
if you...
What's happening there, Dean? I didn't...
Carmen Fojo is one of our senior engineers that was helping me on Lopez. You've seen her before, and she's got an illness. She's been out for about a month and a half and won't be back for another month. So she was doing all of my detailed analysis out there, and I have nobody now. So
maybe we can agendize this for the next Zone 3 meeting then.
Okay. We can do that. And I will look again... I'm sure I called Lawrence Fisk and McFarland, John, because I know them, I work with them, they've been easy, and I either they don't exist anymore, or Chuck is, I know Chuck's been around, but I haven't talked to him in 5 years. So I believe I talked to somebody at the firm, and they had no idea what I was talking about.
As an alternative, you might try Gary McFarland. He may be around, and he may know about it, or may know where Chuck is.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, do you have Clint Milne's home number?
You know, I don't. I was told that Clint, his family has some illness, and I was told to not discuss it with him.
Oh, okay.
On John Wallace's name on things.
I think Debbie and Roy Grant might find it good to talk.
Yeah, right. Or Pismo.
Yeah.
Any other comments on this issue from anybody? All right, how about any other new business? Anything, Dean?
No.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I have something I'd like to at least throw out, and then maybe we can agendize it at some other period in time. Pismo Beach, as you know, we built a new wastewater treatment plant. We're disposing of about 1.5 million gallons a day of water that's it's solid free and it's chlorinated, but it would need to be filtered before that water could be used in any manner to irrigate or to water down any kind of vegetation or anything of that nature. We had a study done which in order to pipe our community, etc., the cost of that water is going to be quite high. We happen to believe, a good many of us happen to believe, that in the future the NPDES permits are going to be denied by the state of California. In fact, they've been heading that way down in the Los Angeles metropolitan sewage area for quite some time. And so there's two items that are kind of driving us in looking at this. Number one is to gain more potable water by having a secondary, let's call it purple water, if you will, that can be used for common areas and parks and this kind of thing. This would save the demand of potable drinking water that we all have through the Zone 3 that will release additional waters. We're investigating grants and one thing or another for the filters that would be necessary in order to filter this. I basically have one developer who already is interested in 1.5 gallons of water a day. We would be looking at someplace in the neighborhood of three filters. Probably one of these filters is generally down all the time. You're changing the screens out and you're changing the chemicals inside and this kind of thing. So basically, you have one that you're working on all the time, and you have two operative. So anyhow, is what I'm kind of asking, that maybe y'all think about this, and maybe we might be able to have the firm come that gave us this report. I can make the report available to the various agencies if they wish it, and because it really is a matter of public record now that it was brought to the City Council,
and we do have it. And you might be interested in it. We also, or I believe, it's my opinion that it's going to be very, very difficult for communities like Cambria to actually get discharge permits for desal plants. That's a very good idea, and the funding is available for that, and I think they got some funding, but they're running into environmental problems very, very similar to what, let's say, the oil companies did, and there are several plants along the coast that are desal plants. There's a couple of them down Ventura and various spots that the oil companies were using at one time to provide water and fresh water for injection and that kind of thing. And they were shut down basically by the state on account of the discharge of high brine water that would be discharged off the reverse osmosis systems, or the filter system. So, and I just want to throw this out because it's a method to get additional potable water in our various agencies by eventually putting purple water systems in and new tracks that go in, et cetera, et cetera. So if you think about it, if you would like, I can make the report available to you. And secondly, we probably could head to our affluent. It goes in on the downside of the South Coast Sanitation District. And this water is basically going out down there. And we bypass their plant and send that water down there. And I mean, that's just where it goes. That's where it goes. And we just think that's environmentally not sound. Mm-hmm. It's not a good idea. And that we'd like to, we have the idea that we'd like to treat that water and use it someplace. And it could be available for other agencies to use if they so desire.
Did they give you costs on this?
Yeah, we have costs to do our our systems, and it's at the present time, you know, it's cheaper to use potable water, but the problem is that you're kind of running out of potable water on its availability, and if we go into a long drought period, potable water may not be available to us. So mm-hmm. we're we got a little bit shaken when the state decided that they weren't going to produce water for a while out of the Delta area, mm-hmm. that recharges the reservoir over in San Luis, San Luis Reservoir that actually feeds this area with state
and
water.
And that reservoir is way down.
That's way down. That's right.
Mr. Chairman, it's probably not a bad idea that we take a little bit closer look at this and put a little more effort into it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And John?
Yeah, that's fine. That's good.
What about your reclamation study? It's several years old now.
Yeah, to follow up on Ted's comments, South County Sanitation District also did a reclamation reclaimed water study. The fact is, it was the third one that had been done for the district. Two previous ones have been primarily suggested by the RCD folks and folks from Arroyo Grande, Ella Honeycutt and others that had prompted the district to look at reclaimed water. And as always, the cost of treating the water, and especially the distribution system to transport the water to places like up in the Mesa for golf course watering, there was a move at one point to take the water to the Unocal refinery, Conoco refinery now down on time, meaning Lopez, State Water, pumping, of course. And then there is also some more factors that are involved with the pharmaceuticals that are in reclaimed water that are becoming more of a concern, called endocrine disruptors. And they change little boy fish into little girl fish. And there's a lot of study going on that type of thing, as to how you treat for it, which is very difficult. and what it really means in the long run. Mm-hmm. So it's an emerging science about the treated water, but at the same time, even if all those obstacles were overcome, there's the cost factor. And what we found at South County Sanitation District was we had a project concept that was viable, but who wanted to step up to buy it? And nobody wanted to buy the water. So that's the ultimate obstacle, is the cost of the treatment and the distribution. But Ted's right, at some point we will be forced to recycle our water in one way or the other. We're also going to be looking at a potential desal project down at the sanitation district plant in conjunction with some of the agencies here. And the advantage there is the brine would be discharged through the outfall line, which would mix with the wastewater, which would not overload the brine loading to the ocean. It would be mixed with potable water, and not potable water, but fresh water. And so therefore the TDS, the dissolved solids in the water, would be substantially less than seawater, rather than dumping brine and getting a brine plume out on the ocean floor, which is a problem that they're talking about in Cambria.
John, and another thing to go along with this whole scheme of recycled water and whatnot is that since we had this E. coli break out here last fall, now all of the agricultural wells are being monitored once a month or whatever, and they're watching things pretty darn closely. So
there's good examples of local recycling. San Luis Obispo, of course, has a purple pipe going across town, and one of the reasons it was affordable there was the use of an old Unocal pipeline. So they were able to make use of that and tie into it to take water to the north of the town, which substantially reduced the cost.
Of course, Phillips is in charge. ConocoPhillips is in charge of the pipeline system now, and we've approached them about that line. And they may not be, when they get everything all sorted out, it may be a little bit easier to do business with them than it was Tosco, because Tosco really never got their hands around the whole thing.
Right.
And so that's what we're hoping, and that kind of a line can be re-sleeved, and will give us a line to the end of our town. Of course, the costs that were done by this firm are based on having to put those main lines in, and certainly if you get an extra line, but the basic thing that I think is necessary is to obtain these filters with some sort of grant process from the federal government, and there are a couple of programs where they are making grants, or they have for grants changeover to this type of water and the use of this reclaimed water. So that's one of the things that prompted the study that we have. And,
John? No?
No.
Karen? I guess my thought is we might want to agendize that when our plate load gets a little bit lower with the... When are we going to be done with the plant upgrade here, Dean, as far as dealing with it ourselves?
I would anticipate that, yeah, probably... our next meeting is September, probably after that time frame.
Give him a break and let him do it.
We'll be... Probably the November meeting would be a good time to do that. And one thing I was just going to mention is that you're aware the county is doing... The county has an integrated regional... management plan for all the water resources through the entire county that is connected with Proposition 50 and some grants that are going on. And several projects are being nominated because they score well in the process of getting grant money. And I'll make sure that Courtney Howard, who is one of my senior engineers, is writing the update for that in the application grant, that we're aware of the reclamation uses. It's certainly one element of the integrated plan that we're looking at. So I'll make sure that if we don't have it, we'll get copies of those and make sure that we consider those. And because this is a long-term project that we're working county, And I think, what is it, North San Benito? The northern
San Benito, Monterey.
Up to Monterey County. There's five counties, I believe, that now the next phase of the Proposition 50 grant money, we're all supposed to be cooperating together. They've decided that they need to tell us what region we're in, and that's kind of the approach we're taking at this point.
All right. Other new business. Anybody else? John?
No.
Karen? Committee member comments. We'll start with Ted. Anything?
No, I have. No, I gave mine to the new business.
Okay. And John?
Dean, I just happened to think when we're talking about reclamation, is the Plain XP thing dead from the oil field out there, Vice Canyon?
Yes, last I heard it got more expensive than, was it Tosco, John? I don't remember.
PXP, I believe.
PXP. Right, that's right, PXP. Last I heard it was dead because after they revised the cost to be a lot more, they looked at it again and it was way a lot more than they anticipated. So it's dead for all purposes, yeah.
They have some kind of, heavy metals in it or something. That is,
well, they had some hefty treatment costs.
Yeah, the treatment costs are very high.
Mr. Costello.
I have nothing.
Mr. Rummage.
One thought that I've had, and this goes back to the habitat plan. Are they still talking about taking the stream gauge out at the Arroyo Grande stream gauge? Are they going to take that out completely?
We're going to modify it. We're not going to take it out.
Okay, because
we lose it, we'll never be able to put it back.
That's
so.
Right. And I was thinking, one of the comments that I heard from some of these fish people was that the fish couldn't get upstream because the pool below the structure wasn't deep enough. But what would be wrong with going in there and excavating it out and making that pool deeper?
Yeah, I think
that
we
might
would
be a pretty cheap way to do it rather than.
Well, I think the HCP actually includes a fish ladder or some that one of the, there's about $1 million of stream improvements associated with the HCP. If it were approved, we would have to do. And I know Salmon Enhancement is actively involved in some grants from the state to look at that. They are doing that with our support. But my staff is also there to make sure that they don't make some unilateral decisions about our facilities to yank something like that out. And so at this point, we're telling them to be cautious about what they do. And trying to, modifications are great, but we don't want to lose the gauge capability there.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Ms. Bright, committee member comments.
It's been